This morning's address is entitled Surrender. And as I said at the reading, it's unusual for me to use the same reading within a few weeks, but Luca Bloom's reading is well worth rehearing. I find it deeply moving that the writer is prepared to be so open with his life struggles. Most of us try to hide what we don't like about ourselves. The title Surrender is so at odds with modern culture. That also strikes me. Because Western culture is based on the premise that we can organize the world. We want a modern health system, a fit-for-purpose education system, good public transport, a home and a reasonable standard of living for everyone. The list of what we want is fairly endless. We believe that if society is properly organized, it will be fair and that we will all be happy. There are, of course, benefits to having a well-run public service. And while a badly run government service may annoy us, a well-run service will not make us happy. While knowledge has progressed over the last few hundred years, we still do not understand many of the elements of human behavior. We don't understand addictions. We don't understand how to properly care for mental health. And indeed, we have no real understanding of happiness itself. We all want to be happy. We have no idea, though, the sure path to happiness. The other downside of wanting a well-organized society, that in pursuit of that notion, we are drowning, and we risk drowning in a sea of bureaucratic red tape. In our brave new world, the individual can often slip through the cracks of red tape because we often abdicate our responsibility to care for one another to bureaucracy. People, and when that happens, people are the losers. A higher pension, fuel vouchers, help with your electricity bill, financial grants have their use. But money in the bank does not alleviate loneliness. It doesn't bring peace. And older people may be able to heat their homes, but only the company of other people generates warmth in life. Going back to that word surrender, of course, the recent history of the northern part of Ireland with its mantra of no surrender does not endear us to that word surrender. As the writer pointed out, the word surrender is associated with weakness. But it is also true that to surrender takes courage, humility, and honesty. Luca Bloom is inspired by the 12-step program to recovery that is used in addictions. Surrender is also an essential element of the Islamic faith. And while Buddhists don't use the term surrender, Buddhism is based on the premise that change is the only certainty in life, and that it is our inability to accept change, or to put it another way, to surrender to change, that causes our suffering. In many parts of the Western culture, Islam is perhaps the most misunderstood of faiths. When we hear the word Islam, one of the first images that comes to mind is the Taliban, Ayatollahs, women forced to wear veils, girls refused education. And of course, that is only part of the story of Islam. And that part has been distorted by followers who have become in politics rather than in sticking to the original teachings. And while we may not be attracted to the Islamic faith, I think we Christians need to remember that the animosity between Muslims and Christians didn't originate on 9/11. It goes back 1,000 years to the Crusades and the many other political interventions made by Western Christians mainly in the Arabic and Islamic world. We're very quick to point fingers. We have to remember our history. The Arabic word Islam means surrender. It also means peace. Muslims sum up their faith as the peace that comes when we surrender our life to the will of Allah. Allah is, of course, the word Muslims use to refer to the originator of the universe. We use the word God. Users of the 12-step program turn control over to a higher power. In Buddhism, they teach that happiness is to be found in accepting change. So here we find the same message coming from many different sources. Buddhism, Islam, the 12-step program. The religion that Muhammad taught is relatively simple. It is 5 precepts called the 5 pillars of Islam. The first one is that there is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet. Muslims, the second one is Muslims pray 5 times each day. The third is that Muslims should give 5% of their wealth, not just income, 5% of their wealth to charity each year. Muslims fast during the month of Ramadan. And if possible, the fifth one is that during their lifetime, that a member of the Islamic faith will make a pilgrimage to Mecca. So they're the basic beliefs of Islam, very simple. Of course, it's when they're expanded that things become more complicated, and when they become involved in politics. As in Judaism and Christianity, in Islam there is one God, no Trinity, and no other gods. And while Muhammad is called the seal of the prophets, Muslims do recognize other prophets, about 240 of them actually, including people like Abraham, Moses, Noah. And they particularly venerate Jesus. And they hold a very special regard in their hearts for Jesus' mother, Mary. What about prayer? Muslims pray 5 times each day. And it is one of the most lovely sights to see is a Muslim at prayer. On holiday a few years ago, I was at a very busy tourist spot, and I noticed a Muslim couple withdraw slightly from the crowd and perform the Islamic prayer. To see 2 individuals so focused among a bustle of holiday makers was really beautiful. There was a little oasis of peace that they created when they took a few moments in their lives to find God. Just a few moments is all it takes, but there was just such a sense of peace around them. So 5 times each day, they draw themselves back to God, what is important. Giving to charity is an obligation for Muslims. It's not an optional extra. And Muslims are encouraged, if it's possible, to go to Mecca in their lifetime. The other pillar is fasting, and I'm going to come back to that later. I have pointed out that religions and other sources of wisdom teach us that to surrender to God or Allah or to a greater power or to life, that when we do that, we accept the inevitability of change. And it's only then we find peace. And if we don't have peace, we're very unlikely to be happy. You can be peaceful and not very happy, but you can't be happy if you're not peaceful. Usually you need the peace for happiness to follow through. As this reading this morning, Surrender, points out, peace is not passive. It doesn't mean that we sit in the sun and let life drift by. It doesn't mean that we pay our taxes and expect the government to look after the welfare of people. Surrender means that we are honest about how we live. It is accepting that we have an obligation to care for others. It is doing whatever we can and whatever is within our power to make the world a better, more loving place. And we do what we can and we let go. We don't have expectations about what will follow from our actions. We don't expect thanks. We don't expect recognition. We surrender our expectations about what will happen. And when we make mistakes, which we inevitably will, we acknowledge the wrong we have done, and do what we can to repair any damage or hurt. And again, let go. I think it's very sad when you hear people talk about, and I did so-and-so for X when they were 2.5 or something. You know, the people who hold on to good deeds. Don't let go. One of the most familiar of the pillars of Islam is the fast of Ramadan. And next Wednesday is the beginning of Ramadan, the first day of Ramadan. The fast for Muslims means that during daylight hours, they don't eat, drink, not even water. They don't smoke. Now, after sundown, they can eat and drink and smoke, but not during daylight hours. Islam is based on a lunar calendar, so it's not a set date every year. The date moves about 10 days each year. So in a cycle of about 33 years, this Ramadan will have passed through the entire year, you know. In countries close to the equator where Islam originated, daylight generally varies very little beyond 12 hours. It might be 11 and a half or 12 and a half, but is very settled. But 12 hours fast, without water even, in a desert is certainly a challenge for anyone. In 2017, in Ireland, Ramadan straddled the summer solstice. And so for Muslims in Ireland in 2017, the fast would have been about 17 hours long. And after 17 hours without water even, you would notice it. But Muslims accept it. They say it's a blessing from God. They surrender to God's will. And that surrender and accepting willingly to fast is really important. It is not of any benefit to anyone when religious practice is imposed. You know, you're always going to get the one who wriggles out of it, and it is of no benefit. When you think about it, though, at one time, pre-Reformation, fasting during Lent was an essential part of Christianity. The Reformed churches dispensed with fasting because the teaching was that Jesus had saved us, ergo we didn't need to, you know, to fast and do penance. Fasting, of course, will never earn salvation for us, but it does have value. It unites body, mind, and spirit so that for a time even, we are present in the moment and present in our body. We are aware rather than living on autopilot. And awareness will give us empathy. When we experience hunger, when we know what hunger pangs feel like, we will feel empathy. Millions of people in the world have no choice about whether or not they will eat. Accounts of famine and images of children who are starving may prick our conscience. But the experience of hunger can actually impel us to do something about the uneasy feeling we get when we think of it. This just struck me during the week as I wrote this, and I don't know if other people have realized it. This year, Christian Lent, Islamic Ramadan, and the Jewish Passover, the fast the night before the Jewish Passover, all overlap on the night beginning the 4th of April to the light of the 5th of April. So for once, the three great monotheistic faiths have a fasting day in common. I don't know how often that occurs. If we were to add together the numbers of people who claim to be affiliated to either of those faiths, you get in excess of 4.6 billion people, which is more than half the population of the world. Just say we were all to share that day of fasting. Wouldn't it be a wonderful experience? And if we were to share that day of fasting and give what we saved to charity, to the hungry in the world, wouldn't that make a difference? I chose that day, not that we're all going to fast for Lent. I know we don't. We're not Muslims. We're not going to fast for Ramadan. But the Jewish festival, when they fast, is 24 hours. And I think it's something we could think about doing just for ourselves and maybe do some good. I know that call is not going to, made from the pulpit here, is not going to reach out to the world, but some people are hearing it. In this church, we are free to find wisdom from many sources. When a variety of different sources give the same advice, that's a hint worth taking for us. Don't waste energy trying to change the world. Spend your energy trying to change yourself, to become more kind and to care for one another, because that's what the world needs. Amen.